B-Pod Studios.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Checkpoint Daily. On today's show, CD Projekt Red is hacked. Do they deserve it? Anthem could be getting a return, and E3 is mulling over going digital. And we close our day with Tier List Tuesdays. Valentine's Day is coming up, and we want to ask, what are the best video game couples of all time? That and more coming up on Checkpoint Daily.
The latest esports and gaming news. Checkpoint XP Daily has got you covered. Find it online at checkpointxp.com. Get in the game with your hosts, Norris, Callie, and Chad.
What's up, y'all? We here. Tuesday episode as usual. This is
what a beautiful Tuesday in Michigan.
It's freezing.
But, the sun's out.
No, it's
that's
nice.
All I care about half it's the time. Nice. Like I could be cold, but the sun's out and I'll be a little bit happy.
But when the sun's out, at least the ice melts off your car.
That's not this sun.
Not this one. But I'm joined by Chad Callahan and Callie Scales. My co-host here on Checkpoint Daily. And, you know, I just want to say this. We've been doing the show for quite a while. I was looking at the litany of episodes that I have on the hard drive. And we've been doing this now for almost longer.
Really? Didn't we start in October?
We started in mid-October.
4 months.
Well, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
It's closer to five. It's closer to five than four.
That's almost 16 weeks worth.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And we've been pretty consistent. I think we've only skipped like holidays.
Just for the holiday stuff.
That was it.
We haven't had a missed episode that wasn't a company holiday.
That was it.
Yet.
Yeah, no, so you're fucking welcome.
That's what we're trying to say.
Yeah, you're welcome, not thank you for listening.
We're welcome.
Anyway, with that said, here's what's happening in the world of video games.
All right, so actually, Norris, I'm going to turn this one over to you because you were telling me this and my jaw kind of dropped. CD Projekt Red got hacked and now the hackers are holding them for ransom?
Yes. So in a statement put out to Twitter early this morning or afternoon for over there in Poland, CD Projekt Red released a statement saying that we have discovered, quote, we've become a victim of a targeted cyber attack due to which some of our internal systems have been compromised. Now, allegedly, what the hackers, quote unquote, have said that they have obtained is source code for Cyberpunk 2077, as well as a unreleased version of The Witcher 3. Now, this seems innocuous. Now, obviously, you know, for what we know, it doesn't seem like there's personal data leaked, but they do say that they have legal documents for the ongoing legal battles that CD Projekt Red is going to. But I want to read this hacker statement because this is.
Oh yeah, because they sent a note.
They sent a note in a readme.
I was gonna say, when you say a note, you mean literally they opened
a
notepad
and screenshot it
and screenshotted it.
Which interestingly, I'm wondering if that's a way for them not to be caught somehow because it's an image.
Well, because the only. You know, breadcrumb essentially is where the image itself came from and not like what.
And you might be able to get around that.
Yeah, but the point is, I got to read this because, it says, "Hello, CD Projekt!" Exclamation points.
Yeah.
Your have been epically pooned.
Oh, God.
We have dumped full copies of the source code from your Perforce server for Cyberpunk, Witcher 3, Gwent, and unreleased version of Witcher 3. We have also dumped all of your documents relating to accounting, administration, legal, HR, investor relations, and more.
Damn.
Also, we have encrypted all of your servers, but we know that you could get most of that stuff back from backups. If we will not come to an agreement, then your source codes will be sold or leaked online. Your documents will be sent to our contacts in gaming journalism. Your public image will go down the shitter even more, and people will see how shitty your company functions. Investors will lose trust, and your stock will dive even lower. You have 48 hours to contact us.
Wait, that's a horrible ransom. No, you didn't make a demand.
No, they
didn't. You just said if we will not come to an agreement, what's the demand?
Yeah, I guess it's like you have to contact us.
So let me just say this.
You got to ask for like $11 billion or something.
Yeah, let me just say this. A lot of people are saying like, is this a, whoa, kind of spat on the microphone there. That's gross.
Ew.
People are saying, like, is this a ruse? Is this something that Cyberpunk would do to garner goodwill?
What kind of goodwill would you get
exactly
from this?
So it's stupid to say that.
It actually makes you look worse.
Right. It's stupid. If anything, it makes your cybersecurity look piss poor.
Yeah. Like, that's a major hack.
It's terrible. And so I would never wish a data breach on a company, because that could sink a company depending on the type of data that
and
is obtained.
It could endanger a lot of people.
Exactly.
There's a lot of people who did buy the game who still like play it. So it's
absolutely
not like you're secure in this.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I really, really hope that this is either a hoax or that they are able to figure this out fairly quickly. But on CD Projekt Red's part, just when you think this whole ordeal cannot get worse for them, it continues to, a new layer, a new element is thrown upon this shit sandwich, and they just keep getting slammed, man. It's almost hilarious at this point.
I mean, kind of. Like, I just looked through it. First of all, they didn't leave a way to contact them.
No, they didn't.
Maybe there's more
senseless
to it.
Yeah, maybe they only like cut part of it or something. I don't know. This is wild. Like, I don't know if this is real or not. I have trouble believing in anyone who starts their sentence with "your have been epically pwned."
Well, CD Projekt is taking it serious. They put out a statement. They said they've talked to their governmental agencies, so they're taking it serious.
I mean,
okay, well,
good.
You should. Yeah, absolutely. I certainly like to know what they're demanding. Is this a money ransom? Is this a fix your game ransom? What is this?
And that brings me to my final point.
Is this Robin Hood or is this
that,
just
right,
Ocean's
exactly.
11? What are you doing?
That brings me to my final point. And I'm a just put this out there. Gamers, all right? Calm the fuck down.
Yeah, it's a video game, guys. Relax.
It's a video game. Yeah. All right, like for real.
Worst
okay.
case scenario, you're out, what, 60 bucks?
You got burned for your 60 bucks. I bought it twice.
You're out 120.
60 I got back. But I bought it twice, right? I'm not tripping off this. If that $60 was your last $60 and you was thrown into a spiral of financial ruin because you bought Cyberpunk, that's not CD Projekt's fault.
No.
That's on you. But to threaten a hack or dox or do whatever to these people, send death threats to people over this game that just was disappointing, that's stupid. You guys really need something else going on in your life.
What would Keanu Reeves think of you now?
Right, disappointed.
He would. He'd be really upset. But anyway, speaking of massive data breaches, E3 is deciding to go digital.
Yeah, so E3 is going to be going digital in 2021. At least that's what the rumor suggests. They still have to get approval from the ESA to do so, but the big pitch has been made to bring the concerts and the keynote addresses and the walkthroughs and the trailers all to go digital this year, this after last year's event was canceled due to COVID-19, and this year's event expected would be the same if they tried to go on live as they normally do. I got to tell you something. I could get behind digital E3, because if there's one thing E3 has done, it has gotten so far up its own ass that, going out to E3 was a childhood dream, and it was awesome the first year I did it. The second time I went to E3, to me, was very, okay, there's a lot of long lines and entitled people here. I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I like E3 for everything besides the actual expo itself. I love the parties and the meetups and
that's all great.
Like getting to actually be face to face with people that you've known on Twitter for the better part of a year or a couple of years. I love that part of it. Chad, we went to TwitchCon. And
oh, that was fun.
TwitchCon was fun.
Well, that's
but the most fun was the stuff that happens
after parties.
Yeah,
and
outside of
it. Like, it's always, there's one thing that I always get bummed out is obviously networking. But as a consumer, you know, I can see this just being what I would have done anyways.
Right. And here's how I feel. And you're absolutely right, Callie. E3 has spent the better part of, you know, 10 years being up its own ass about how important it is.
Yeah.
Here is the part that is going to be the nail in E3's coffin, is that they are not, without being able to sell actual physical space.
Yeah.
What benefit is there for a publisher or developer to not just do a Direct? It'd be immensely cheaper.
It would be
for Nintendo and the rest of them to just do a Direct.
It would have to be to the scale, maybe not to the scale of the Super Bowl, just in case, I'm not sure. But it would have to be to that scale of like some type of massive game kind of thing. And you have to make it an event, like a really interesting event.
But that's not going to happen without a live in-person element is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Norris, I hear what you're saying. Exactly. Because Sony and SE and Nintendo and Xbox, and they've all shown a perfect capability to hold their own announcement events. So if not for the physical being there moment, what does E3 have to offer them now that would sway them from just saying, I'll run a Sony Direct?
What did they have before?
The actual physical experience.
I guess, because
But the thing is, the networking is valuable. The getting the games in the hands of the press and the influencers and all that stuff is valuable.
Having every gaming outlet in the country there trying your game hands-on and talking to the developers, there's a value to that because then they're all going to go writing their blogs back home.
Yeah, and so it was valuable from that aspect and also the aspect of the experiential stuff because, like, you know, when 7 Remake was coming out, I believe that was now 2 years ago, when you walked through the thing, it was set up like a train station in Midgar, so you will walk through.
Turks are hassling.
Yeah, you're getting hassled by Turks. Huh. And so it was like this whole thing. There's an amusement park feeling to it.
Now, Chad, if your question is, has E3 been worth the cost of doing it for the last 10 years? That's an outstanding question because I doubt it.
I don't think so. And I used to be, Callie, you know me, I was a firm, staunch supporter of E3.
Oh, yeah.
I was somebody who said E3 needs to happen no matter what because of what it represents to gaming and gamers. And now that we've gone through COVID, now that every year I go, I get sick as a fucking dog. Now that every time, you know, you see these lines and some developers know how to deal with press and influencers better than other ones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes the lines are long, sometimes they're not. It's cool, but if you don't have that physical space where gamers can join other gamers and trade stories and camaraderie, I don't see the value of E3.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where they're going to make their money because obviously you could do advertising, but only if you've got these major companies that are coming to do a keynote at your online event.
And I'm going to tell you because...
And if that's the case, they're going to ask for a share of that advertising revenue.
Because a certain, you know, I don't want to say rumors, but certain sources have said that they're thinking about actually charging these developers to be a part of this thing.
Why
would anybody in their right mind do that?
No, especially because there's Gamescom too. You know, that was like last year. That's where we got that huge buttload of stuff, like from gaming developers.
But all of it across the board is in jeopardy. TGS, Gamescom,
that's true,
GDC.
Microsoft released most of their information during their own Xbox.
So did Sony.
So did Sony.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we're talking about these things, you know, there's nothing really that any of these conventions can offer to developers beyond we want people can coalesce. And without that, what is that?
What could it be without developers if it was more focused on the consumer? I don't know what that looks like.
In a digital-only space, I have no idea what that looks like.
I don't know either.
You could do concerts and stuff like that and make it more of a festival.
But now it's MAGFest.
Exactly. Now you're doing MAGFest online. Now, that said, you have a legacy name behind you, and maybe you could do something like
MAGFest.
That's
what I'm thinking. I feel like you relied too heavily on these developers, and now you're going to have them charge when they're going to do their own anyways.
That's the thing. Like, if your leading keynotes at this point are Capcom, the PC Gaming Showcase, and Konami's Pachinko Hour, then I'm sorry.
I'll tell you this. We in the office asked ourselves, with Evo gone, what could replace Evo? Maybe this is something E3 thinks about.
An esports
game tournament?
Well, an esports element.
Well, we know that they had dipped their toes into esports
a couple times.
No, not very well, but they did attempt it. Again, until you can hold it live, though, I don't think so.
I agree. As a digital project, E3 has no value to me whatsoever.
All right, so EA is going to be making a pretty heavy decision this week. We got word that later on this week they're going to be deciding the fate of Anthem.
Let me tell you something. You know what was
Bye,
one
Felicia.
Of my favorite games from Suda51? It was called Let It Die. All right? And that's how I feel about Anthem. Listen, Chad, this was even before you even joined us here on Checkpoint. But when Anthem was first released, and Cali can verify this, okay? Mm. My check, you can check my references.
By the way, I went and checked to see if Let It Die is a real game. It is.
I know it is because I played it. you can check my references, all right? I said Anthem was going to be terrible from the moment they announced it.
I feel like this show had a pretty hardline stance that Anthem was going to be pretty bad.
Oh, but I was first out the gate.
Yeah.
All right. When I saw it at E3, I said, this is going to be terrible. This is going to be everything about Destiny you hate and none of the good stuff.
You know what? You know who agreed with you? Robbie Fatstacks.
He sure did.
The biggest BioWare fan that I know, who looked at Anthem and said, nope. Like he from the and I had to be the one trying to defend it. Like, well, we know so little about it. So he's like, it's gonna suck.
Yeah.
It's gonna be terrible. And he was right.
Yeah. And so, you know, listen, I understand, and I want to get into a larger conversation about this that I want to ask. I understand they want to save this as an IP. They put a lot of money and energy into it. But in the post No Man's Sky, post FF14 era, how many people are going to try this whole we'll just revive our game later tactic? Because everybody can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, our whole worry with games like No Man's Sky and even FF14 back in the day was like, I really don't want this to start setting a precedent for the right way to do things. And
that's exactly what happened.
On the other hand, if Anthem might be the one where it's like, okay, but it doesn't always work. A lot of the time, in fact, it probably won't work. No Man's Sky is an unbelievable tale of perseverance, if nothing else, and a fan base that was not willing to let the concept go.
Right.
And it worked, so good for them. 14 2.0, another example of that. It was a case of, hey, it's a Final Fantasy MMO. It's something that we really want, so we're willing to wait and have you try it again, and we'll give it another shot because we really want this. We don't want to all go back to 11. It feels gassed at this point.
Right.
So the question becomes with Anthem, do we really want this?
No.
Here's why it's no. EA's behind it.
That's number one. No, legit though, that's number one.
Yeah.
That's number one. EA, with No Man's Sky, you had a smaller developer. You had people trying a really ambitious project. And even though they came out and completely misled everyone, people gave them another shot.
Yeah.
Because they understood what No Man's Sky was trying to do.
Right.
Right? Same thing with 14, but with 14, it's the opposite end of the spectrum. You got a beloved developer who constantly gets the benefit of the doubt in spite of much of their track record over the past 15 years, right? But people love Square Enix, myself included, right? So they got a pass. They said, you know what? We will fall on our sword and say that we screwed this up.
Yeah,
and we'll
literally blow up the world.
And we'll blow up the world and do it again. And they did. And they put out one of the best MMOs on market right now.
But again, it comes down to the demand of it. It's because we wanted that game to be good.
EA doesn't have either one of those.
Yeah.
EA still has active animus against them. They have maybe one IP that people like, which is Fallen Order. That at least doesn't have massive amounts of people saying how much they hate it, even though they still buy it.
Right.
Yeah.
And they don't have the benefit of the doubt. If this was BioWare by itself, they would get the benefit of the doubt.
Which does blow my mind, because theoretically, if you strip a lot of what Anthem is out of it, if you go back to like a story-driven game where you build an Iron Man suit effectively and fly around and shoot things, like, on its face, that's pretty appealing.
It should be
that
awesome.
That is a game I would like to have, but this game is so far and away removed from that that I just don't feel like the demand is there to fill that game, especially after then you had Marvel's Avengers come out and be bland as all hell. Like,
I just hate this looter genre. I hate this genre. I really do. I don't like it. People don't do it well. Destiny got it done, and they did it well.
Destiny did it
well. Borderlands did it well.
Did it well.
Right?
All the way back to Diablo.
Did it well. Right? You can't... There's no more room. There's no more room for looter games. We got Borderlands. We got Destiny. Destiny in and of itself is an ongoing game. It still exists, constantly updated.
Yeah.
You are not going to supplant that crown from them with some shit like Anthem. You're just not.
No.
That would have been better off at just saying this is a new IP, single player, do you, and we'll focus. Anthem 2 will be where we bring in multiplayer.
They could go that route with it. I think that we're going to hear later this week that Anthem's getting the axe and they're giving it the old Yeller treatment.
I disagree. I think they'll try to revive it.
I don't know why. I think they'll revive it.
This is EA we're talking about.
I mean, if they're hemorrhaging money, though, I don't know if they'll try.
No, they will revive the hell out of this thing because they'll see how much money they leave it on the table by not.
What do you predict? Like, what's the revival look like? What does their announcement look like? Listen, what are they changing?
Nothing. That's the problem. It's EA. What they'll do is they say, we've come out and given the game, we're going to give the game additional polish, and we're going to restructure the loot system, and then we're gonna allow progression to be much more satisfying, and we'll add a new map. That's all they're going to do.
Ugh.
If you think that this game is going to get bust down to its foundations, and listen, I hope I'm wrong. I hope this thing fades into obscurity, never to be mentioned on the show again. But I know EA, and I know that's not what EA does.
Fair enough.
Anyway, that's going to be it for part one. And listen, if EA is listening, you heard me. Anyway, we will be back with more Checkpoint Daily, where we celebrate good old Cupid Day and create a tier list for the top couples in all of video games out of the 10 that we got.
Yeah. Tier List Tuesday, baby.
Tier List Tuesday is coming up on Checkpoint Daily.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Working around bugs in Cyberpunk 2077, but your stomach is making you hangry? Cure your craving with Zaxby's. No need to hit pause. Order Zaxby's famous chicken, sandwiches, and salads for pickup and delivery on the Zaxby's app or over at Zaxby's.com. Cruise the streets of Cyberpunk's Night City while it arrives at your doorstep. Just order from Zaxby's indescribably good menu on the app or online and never miss a moment of game time.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another Checkpoint Daily. Norris Howard here alongside Chad Callahan and Callie Scales. And listen, we know that you guys love talking about video games. We know you love talking about comic books. Why not combine your love for the two and listen to our national radio show or The Other Identity? We got plenty and plenty of content for you guys. Hey, maybe you're in college, too. Checkpoint on campus would be the place for you. And Chad has done so well and created new socials for us at On Campus Esports. So I'm excited for that. Now, we know it's Cupid Day is coming up.
It is.
Everybody in this room is taken.
We are.
So yep. We are having a very expected Valentine's Day. I'm not saying good or bad. That's not a value statement.
Nope.
But we kind of know who we'll be spending this upcoming Sunday with.
At least we hope so.
At least we hope so.
Something has gone horrifically
wrong. Something has gone very wrong or very right.
We have a couple days to find out.
But we wanted to say, why don't we figure out who are some of the best gaming couples are?
And that works out since it's Tier List Tuesday.
That's right. So we got five different categories, S, A, B, C, and D.
Okay.
About who the top gaming couples are. Now, this is not every gaming couple in the world. I just got a select few that we will pick. Starting out with an old classic.
Oh, God. Okay.
Squall and Rinoa.
Oh.
I
know there's going to be a lot of disagreement in this room about this one.
I don't know. I feel like this is...
I feel like of the romances here, this is very standard.
This is the typical one that I feel like outside of Tidus and Yuna is the most memorable.
Really?
I think so.
Memorable, I'll grant you, because FF8 was a love story.
I feel like
the whole game was about that.
The whole game was the point of it. Yeah, for me, Tidus and Yuna was always like number one because of that scene. But I guess I'll give this an A tier.
A tier? All right.
I mean, I'm somewhere between A and B tier on it because, while I do think that it is my favorite of the Final Fantasy games and it is a very focal point of it, I don't call it a particularly healthy relationship. I don't really care for the way their romance develops throughout the story. And at the end of it, he's willing to basically end the world for her instead, which is not a healthy mindset. If you want a good relationship in Final Fantasy games, look to the next game in the series, FF9, which had a much healthier dynamic.
And a much more natural growth as well.
So yeah, I'm somewhere between an A and a B. I could be argued for either.
I agree with you, Callie. I'm going to put it at B.
Okay.
I'm going to put it at B. I think it is the archetypical game romance. That's not like Go Save the Princess, obviously.
Right.
Yeah. But it has a lot of that in it. So,
well, I mean, they do call her the princess when you first meet her.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So there's a lot of that coming up. Next, Chloe and Rachel.
No. E. F. G. What's the lowest rating I can give this? Listen. All right. So here's my thing, right? Chloe and Rachel are... obviously, they're the focus of the prequel game to Life is Strange, Before the Storm. And honestly, if I'm not being the quick shipper that I am, I very much enjoyed Before the Storm. I thought their actual relationship and Chloe struggling with kind of some latent lesbian things in the beginning of it. She's having some dreams that are kind of messed up to her. And she's like, okay, that's new.
Mm-hmm.
And then she ends up falling for Rachel. And it takes us into where we meet her in actually Life is Strange. That said... I was a huge fan of Chloe and Max in Life and Strange, and I'm so glad the comics are following that. So, I don't know. B.
I thought you were going to go lower specifically because of Chloe and Max.
I will argue it because it is a good relationship, even if it's not the one I want, and I refuse to be that person who's like, no love is valid if it's not the relationship that I want.
All right.
That said, it only gets a B.
All right. I don't know. I don't know the story as well as you guys, so I just know of what Callie's told me. So I'll just have to feed off that energy, but I'll give it a C.
Good for you, Chad. Good for you. Stand up for your morals.
I rated it at high B simply because I think it's very natural and I like the story. I've always been keen for a cis guy, right? A cishet guy. I've always enjoyed people's like sexual awakening stories.
Oh, yeah.
I always find that to be some of the most compelling stories that are told, not just in gaming, but just in general.
Yeah.
And so I was going to put it high B to almost an A, but we'll take the law of averages and we'll put it at a B minus, which means it's a C to me.
No, you can put it as a B. That's fine.
No, it's a C. I don't care.
Okay.
All right. Next, coming up.
That, by the way, we're going to get so much hate for that because it is a really good
relationship. It's a great
relationship. I don't know.
And to an extent, it is just not the one that I want.
Yeah, it's a good relationship. Nathan Drake and Elena Fisher.
Okay. I struggle with this.
Can we confirm that Elena Fisher is Sam Fisher's wife and Nathan Drake is stealing her away? that confirmed
we're
in
not,
the canon?
We're
is
not confirming that. If anything, she'd be Sam Fisher's daughter.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because it's a little bit older, much older game, but... I here's the thing. I struggle with this one because she doesn't exist for like a whole game, I believe. Like she's missing for a whole game. And then they kind of bring her back in the most recent one. I think it was 4. And I don't know. And I feel like they kind of shoehorned her back in. So I'm like, is that a real relationship when you're just disappeared for an entire game?
But is the romance good and she's just a victim of bad writing? Or is it? Or is
I don't
it,
think
you
the
just...
romance is that good.
Okay.
I think I'm going to give it a C.
A C,
I'm
say Callie. It's
not Does great. This have anything to do with the fact that you want to be with Nathan Drake?
No, see, I don't have that fascination with Nathan Drake.
Not for Drake?
As much.
Okay.
No, I mean, Tom Holland, yes. Not Nathan Drake, no.
Okay.
Fair enough. You know, I think it's a good relationship. I've never had a problem with it. I'm not the biggest fan of those games, so it's not like I have a huge personal interest in it, but I think it's a pretty solid relationship. Like Chad, I'm a little perturbed by her just being gone for a game, which is weird.
Yeah.
But it's a B to me.
It's a B. If I had an F, I would give it an F.
Okay. So E for you then?
Yes.
Or D?
D. Here's why I feel that way. I think she's dreadfully boring. I think he's so much more interesting.
Yeah.
She just gets overshadowed by him at every moment. And then in the second game, the best of the series, by the way, he meets Chloe. And she's way awesomer by every stretch of the imagination.
You know
she is Nathan Drake's equal. She's just as smart, just as adventurous, can shoot better than him, and is also, in my opinion, more attractive. This gets a D.
You know what? You swayed me. D.
D. The worst
I'll
ever.
I'll take a C.
All right.
No, it's the worst. All right, next we got coming up Commander Shepard. Just Commander Shepard.
Commander Shepard and whoever.
And whomever.
Whoever. I'm
going to go off S.
Sure.
S!
Yeah, like, listen, Commander Shepard and Tali, great. Commander Shepard and Liara, great. Commander Shepard and Garrus, great. Commander Shepard and Caden and Ashley,
there's two of them in that one?
No, Caden or Ashley.
Caden or Ashley.
Like, it's human companion that you didn't kill in the first game.
Yeah.
Commander Shepard and Thane made me cry, but great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's S.
S. The romance writing in the BioShock game, or BioShock, in any BioWare game,
yeah,
is always pretty good, especially good in the Mass Effect series. Yeah, S.
All right, so we got coming up Tidus and Yuna.
I'm going to rank this higher than Rhinoa and Squall. Just
right.
Because it was my first romance in a game.
Okay. So you will say an A.
I'm giving it an A.
I actually, low-key, I'm also going to say an A.
The only reason I'm not giving it an S is because in Final Fantasy X-2, she is way too obsessed with bringing him back.
Yeah.
And like that
it's
part is very unhealthy.
Yeah, so no, I agree. If we're just in what I am is take it, you know, I'm taking Tidus and Yuna Final Fantasy X by itself, not talking about X-2. But I give it an A simply because I do think it is a more natural, healthier progression of people who end up liking each other. Tidus comes out of nowhere. He appears. And he's like, whoa, this summoner girl is pretty cute.
Yeah.
But
it's not the focus
but
of
it's,
the game.
Not only is it not the focus, he doesn't become like this weirdo, like obsessive, like, oh, I just realized I love, like, Squall, a switch is flipped, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, wait, I love her.
Yeah, that switch is flipped at the end of disc 2.
That's
yeah.
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Rather as with Tidus and Yuna, because of the things that she's going through, and it's written more naturally because traumatic events bring people closer and all this other stuff. And so I feel like it's just a much more natural thing. And, I mean, he disappears at the end. It's heartbreaking, but it's great.
I give it a C. I hate this couple. I hate them so much. All the way back to my first playthrough of FF10, I did not like this couple. I don't like Tidus at all. I feel like they spent 50 to 60 hours convincing me to like Tidus when I did not like him at all.
You don't have to like him. You just gotta like
only to off him at the end. Listen, they're not even the best couple in FF10. Waka and Lulu are better, so no, see, I get
Whoa,
it.
I don't
absolutely
agree.
Absolutely not.
My only issue with that is because Lulu was with Waka's brother at the beginning,
right,
and that is weird
problematic,
as hell.
Problematic. Problematic, number one. Number two, Waka's racist. Number three.
He's a racist.
He's racist.
He's racist to the Albed.
Right?
He's 100%
and
racist.
So does that make Lulu MAGA as well? I
oh
think
my
so.
God.
Lulu's a
okay,
fucking Karen.
I cannot do that because Lulu was my favorite character.
She's a Karen.
She is not.
She's a
she
Karen.
Will lightning bolt you
She's
right here.
She's a goth Karen.
She's goth Karen.
All right. Anyway, since Callie's vote brought him down a little bit, they gotta be a B.
Boo.
All
Good.
Right. Let's speed up just a little bit. Next, Mario and Peach. Classic.
Oh.
Mario and Peach.
It's problematic.
It's the greatest cuck in gaming history.
Absolutely.
Admittedly, I missed a couple of Mario games. I missed that late Wii U mm-hmm. generation of Mario games. So maybe I don't know. Maybe they have actually been
a couple
know. In
I
some
way. I don't
way.
Know and don't care.
Yeah, I got to tell you something. Someone getting kidnapped, being put in a tower and rescued, a romance does not make.
No, it doesn't. D.
D. I hate I hate these two.
D. All right, D.
By the way, it's Mario and Paulina, first of all.
I don't care.
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
I don't care. All right. Master Chief and Cortana.
Ooh. Okay. So, again, pushing the boundaries of what a relationship is. Obviously, Cortana is an artificial intelligence. That said.
But the movie Her has shown us that you can fall in love with an AI.
And yeah, I was about to say, this is beyond it because she actually has some, I don't know, I don't want sentience behind her. Where she
well, she
actually
always
has
sentience.
Yeah, but like it's beyond just, it's very like emotional because she clearly is doing a lot of stuff in the games as it progressed to protect Master Chief.
And specifically.
Specifically
him. Yeah.
Way beyond the bounds of what she's supposed to do. Right. I completely agree. And after all, our friends in the Ace community have shown us that physical contact not necessary for a happy, loving relationship. No, I actually, as much as I do feel like the Halo games fall flat sometimes in their storytelling, I always did buy into the chemistry
this
of
is
Master
the good
Chief
part
and Cortana.
About it.
Even back in Halo 1, mm-hmm. where they were just kind of smart asses to each other, to Halo 2, where she gets kind of captured at the end, and her eventual rescue in Halo 3. I like this relationship. I give it an A.
I'll give it an A.
I never thought I'd say this. I, too, will give it an A. I think it's maybe
the most redeeming factor
the
of the
most
Halo
redeeming
franchise.
Part of the
it's,
Halo
it's,
franchise.
It's that relationship and the multiplayer.
All right, we're getting into some tough ones now. Sonya Blade and Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat.
I didn't even know they were a couple.
Well, they had Cassie Cage.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
and in the movie they certainly were.
Our best
portrayal of the relationship is from the movie.
No, it's not.
No?
You got to play through Mortal Kombat 10 and 11 and you get a great view into their relationship.
Really? Well, then Norris, I'm going to trust you a little bit more on this one because my primary knowledge of it is the movie,
all right.
Which was okay.
I will say this, even though they end up breaking up, they get divorced after Cassie is born. It's an A-. I really like it. It's great.
Really?
It's like it's a perfect example of two people who should hate each other that got together, and then they realize that, oh, shit, we're actually perfect for one another.
Yeah.
But then
they're not because they break up?
Exactly.
See, I deduct points if they end up breaking up at the end.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
No, because nothing lasts forever.
True love lasts forever.
No.
I murdered an entire city to save true love in Life is Strange, so... I'm just going to say
No, let me tell you something right now. Everybody comes into our life for seasons. Nothing is permanent, okay? And that's why we must enjoy the time that we are given to us, including the people who we let into our lives. Now, I got a lot of exes.
I have a few, yeah.
All right? I don't hate any of them, all right?
I legitimately
don't hate any of my exes. I still got a lot of love for them. And if something bad happens to them, I would never wish that, ever. So to me, I could see myself if I got married and got divorced. I don't want to because divorces can be ugly sometimes.
A lot of money.
I would still be very close to, you know, my ex and you know, try to make everything be as cordial as possible.
See, I guess that's a different background. I had a very abusive relationship I was in for about a year.
Yeah,
and,
so I
can definitely foresee someone where we would end it and I would never want to speak to them again. I would say no. I see.
Yeah, I'm going to C too.
See?
I can't get behind a.
No, it's fair. I'll put it at the top of C.
Okay.
All right. Last two, very quickly, we have Ellie and Dina from The Last of Us 2.
Oh. So you guys have heard my immensely unpopular opinion.
You do
about,
hate this game
about the last.
Well, everyone
of us.
Hates Ellie, right? Is that who they hate?
But here's the thing: I did like this relationship a lot.
Yeah,
I thought it was a good focal point of the game. I don't have a lot of complaints about it, other than knowing how it ends.
Yeah,
S. I like it.
I personally also think it's a high A to a S.
Yeah.
I think it's a really great part of
Put
the
it
game.
Put it an A then.
I think it's complex. I think it's kind of messy, just how real relationships are.
But does that make it an A tier relationship?
Yes.
Because it's messy?
Well, no, I think it's realistic.
Got it.
Yeah, it's real. Like, again, I would not say that mine and Sarah's marriage is the least messy relationship I've ever been in. There's plenty of things that we disagree on. There's plenty of drama, but that's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... I'll say the top of A.
Okay. Top A. We don't have an S yet.
We do. Captain Shepard.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, Commander Shepard.
Commander Shepard, you're right.
Yeah. All right. And the last one, which I'm not sure if you guys played this game, but I will speak at length about it, is Bayek and Aya from Assassin's Creed Origins.
I just experienced Assassin's Creed Origins. Now, I need to say this. I'm not at the end of Assassin's Creed Origins.
Oh, that's fine.
We're about 90% of the way through.
Okay.
They have not yet gotten back together. I don't know if they do or not.
Okay.
I think
what you saw...
Of what I see, they have some of the most amazing chemistry I've ever seen and a very, very realistic portrayal of a relationship going through grief. They are saying, you know, hey, we don't work together. We have to focus on our work and more important things. And I don't believe for a second that they don't believe they don't work together. I can see this is grief.
Yeah.
And this is that's a very real portrayal of it.
Yeah.
I think they're an amazing relationship. I give them an A.
All right. Chat.
Sure.
If they get back together, I might call it an S.
Sure. I want to call it an S. I'm going to call it an S. Fuck it.
Okay.
I'm going to call it an S. Here's why I'm going to call it an S. Simply because of what Callie said. It's absolutely right. It is two people who have two very different ways of expressing grief.
Yep.
Who also understand that if they were together, they would get nothing done outside of just be grieving.
Yep.
Which is probably would have been the healthier thing to do. But they knew they couldn't do it. So I thought it was great. When they are together, it is one of the only times you actually say, wow, these are two people who genuinely love each other.
Yeah.
It's one of the first times in video games that I've felt that way. Where it's just like, are the voice actors fucking?
Like probably.
But like that's how real it felt. Hmm. So our results in the S tier, we got Captain Shepard and everybody on the Normandy. And we have Bayek and Aya. In the A tier, wow, this actually turned out super even. In the A tier, we have Ellie and Dina and Master Chief of Cortana. In the B tier, we have Final Fantasy, basically. Then in the C tier, we have Johnny Cage and Sonya Blade.
If they'd had Garnet and Zidane, it would have been S tier.
Yeah, I probably would have put it up
there. I'd have gave it an A. And then we also have Chloe and Rachel in the C tier. And then in the D tier are the most standard vanilla relationships, I would say. Being Nathan Drake and Elena and Mario and whoever he decides to save
yeah.
from a castle. So that's going to be it. I'm going to save this and we can tweet it out and you guys can argue with us. But here it is. And with that said, guys, we hope everybody has a great Valentine's Day. But we will be here tomorrow for two episodes of Checkpoint Daily. Make sure you go to our Twitch channel to check us out. Twitch.tv/Checkpoint XP. For Callie Scales and Chad Callahan, I am Norris Howard. Bye-bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.